Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The October 28th regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission will now come to order. We'll pause for the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgements. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation, and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each agenda item on regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will then be followed by a presentation from the petitioner, should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or the staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a blue speaker card and give it to staff. If you're participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you'll be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, and as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be less than or equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, for those participating online, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item. If you want to speak on a petition, once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain you want to speak, still use the raise your hand feature, or if in person, fill out the blue speaker card. You will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then address any additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. And the first order of business is the approval of the agenda.
Motion to approve the agenda.
Full second.
Thank you. It's been properly moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Next, we have notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments, which we have none of. So we will move to items requested being removed from the final agenda, which includes special use to establish a parking facility in TC1 zoning district, special use to establish a parking facility in the TC1 zoning district at 2505 Abercorn Street, and variance to GDP 502 of Virginia Avenue. Is there anyone here to speak on these items? All right, need a motion.
Motion to remove agenda items.
Steve, a second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. We'll do a voice vote again. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, items requested to be withdrawn. There are none, so we'll move to the consent agenda. We have approval of the September 16th, 2025 meeting minutes, major subdivision, Silver Subdivision, 0 Williams Street, major subdivision Meadow Lakes Phase 3 at 2610 Little Neck Road, and approval of the 2026 meeting calendar.
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Full second.
We will go to a voice vote again for that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? There is no old business, so we'll move into regular business. Number 8, Flume Amendment from Civic Institutional to Commerce Suburban, 11750 Abercorn Street.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and the members of the board. My name is Subhashi Karunaratna, and I will be presenting both Flume Amendment and Map Amendment for 11750 Abercorn Street together, but it needed to be voted separately. Okay, so this is a request to amend the Flume map from Civic Institutional to Commercial Suburban, also a rezoning to change the zoning map from Office in an Institutional expand to Community Business. Sorry about that. And this is the property highlighted in yellow that we're talking about. It is at the junction of Abercorn and Mercy Boulevard. We'll go to the full map. As you can see, the red portion here is commercial suburban, and that is the requested flume for this property. Right now, it has civic and institutional flume designation. And the requested zoning community business is, again, in the vicinity in the three other corners. And the existing zoning is office and institutional expanded. This right here is the aerial view of the site. As you can see here, these are the buildings. And to the northeast of this picture, there's the hospital. And right here, you can see the Publix and some other commercial development. And the Georgia Southern Armstrong campus is somewhere to this corner of the property. And this is the Abercorn Street, and this is the Mercy Boulevard. So this is the concept plan of the site. Originally, there was a hotel with five buildings, as you can see here. And recently, these three buildings in the front was destroyed with fire. And now the property owners are proposing a new development in the front of the property with a subdivision, but that is something that's going to happen after the whole property is going to be rezoned upon the approval of today's decision. And this property has an area of 121,000 plus square feet, and this curved frontage towards the Mercy Boulevard is something around 548 feet, and there's a 250 feet fronting towards Abercorn, but the access that they're proposing is toward Mercy Boulevard. Since this property is located in a commercial corridor, which is Abercorn, and because it is going to be a suitable commercial development in this junction of the two streets, staff is recommending approval for both the flume and the rezoning requests. Thank you. That's it for me. Any questions?
All right. Is the petitioner here?
Good afternoon, members of the commission. My name is John Northup. I'm an attorney with Bowen Falligan. And perfect. Thank you. I've just got just a few slides. Ms. Grunerath, her presentation was accurate in every sense. I've got a few slides that I'm going to try to run through as quickly as I can. I think some of them might be a little bit duplicative, but I think it will behoove the commission to be able to see them. Great. Thank you. So I'm here today representing Southeastern Retail Development, LLC, which is also, I'm going to call it CERD. It's a lot easier to say than mouthful. I've got here with me Keegan Stacco and Connor Walsh, who are principals of CERD, and they will answer any questions that I can't, that the commission may have. The first slide shows another aerial view of this property. As you can see, this is from a southerly perspective, but you can see Abercorn. The intersection of Abercorn and Mercy Boulevard. The subject property is highlighted in yellow in the middle. And as you can see, the area is largely commercial. There's a big parcel that's obviously St. Joseph's. St. Joseph's has been there forever. But then you've got most of the corridor right along Abercorn is a mix of different commercial uses. You've got a Tropical Smoothie Cafe, Jiffy Lube, Cookout, another hotel. You've got some auto, some retail auto establishments. You've got a CVS across the street, some legal offices, and then immediately to the west there is a rehabilitation center that is more in keeping with the medical type of use that St. Joseph's has just to the north. The property itself is 2.8 acres roughly, and extends back from Abercorn along Mercy Boulevard. You can see on the next slide, this is a historical view. This was actually taken in March of 2022. And this shows you, this is taken from the perspective of roughly the corner of Abercorn and Mercy. You can see the hotel behind behind the tree and the sign. This was the best view that I could get, but this was what the hotel used to look like. And then in, as Ms. Karunarathne said, in March of 2024, there was a fire, and the fire burned down more or less the front portion of the hotel, which was subsequently razed. So on the next slide, you can see what it currently looks like. This is taken from a slightly different perspective. This is along Abercorn itself, but you can see that the front portion is now just a concrete pad and then the existing pavement that surrounds what used to be the hotel. The back of the hotel is still currently functioning as a hotel. So the current owner was able to raise the front, continue to operate the back as a hotel, and that's anticipated to continue. So the idea that we have is to subdivide the property. Again, we are not doing that today. That's something that we will do when we get closer to closing, pending a successful rezoning. But you can see here, this is a this is the concept plan again that was already shown. But you can see how the property is subdivided, with the northern portion being the remaining portion of the hotel that will continue to be run as a hotel, and then the southern portion will be developed into two different buildings, both commercial uses. One would be a coffee shop on the west side that's got a double drive-through, and then on the east side would be a building that would be a fast casual restaurant. And both of those would be serviced by the existing entrance that is just to the right. There is, I think we anticipate putting in a secondary entrance a little bit farther north that will help alleviate some of the traffic, the ingress and egress into the new commercial southern portion once it's subdivided. So currently the existing zoning classification for this parcel is office and institutional expanded. And that really is something that is intended for, there are a lot of different uses you can put in OIE. You can put in hospitals, schools, offices, hotels. You can put in restaurants into OIE. So for a while, we weren't sure we were going to need to try to seek a rezoning. But the problem is that with a restaurant use, it's a limited use in this category. And so you cannot, any restaurant use has to be an adaptation of an existing building. You can't build anew. And obviously, we've got a vacant pad, so that wouldn't work for us. The other restriction in OIE as to restaurants is you cannot have drive-throughs. And because the coffee concept that we're looking at has a drive-through, we determined that the best thing to do would be to try to seek a rezoning. The future land use map, as you can see, actually this slide shows both the future land use map classifications and the zoning. So you've got OIE that is kind of all the northwestern corner, which includes the hospital, the rehabilitation center, and this property. And then there are two parcels on the south side of the street that are also OIE that are now commercial uses. I believe one is the Vaden building and another is Farrah and Farrah's legal office. But you can see the colors on this slide show the future land use map categories that currently exist. So you've got civic institutional in the purple. And again, that's kind of the hospital area and the subject parcel. And then the red is suburban commercial. And those are largely commercial properties, a lot of the ones that I named earlier. And as you can see, it extends on both sides of Abercorn, all the way from Mercy all the way over to Larger Drive. So, and then also to the west of Mercy on the south side of the street. So we feel that seeking a change in the use map would be consistent with what is already there, especially because of this parcel's location on the northwestern corner. So again, just to run through what we're seeking, we are seeking to rezone from office institutional expanded to community business, which is a broader zoning classification. The reason that we are actually looking at amending the future land use map is because per the Savannah zoning ordinance, in order to have a community business zoning classification, you also have to have the only flume category that allows that is the commercial suburban. So that's the reason we're seeking both amendments here. And again, because of the existence of both the commercial suburban and the community business classifications in this area, we're not doing anything that's out of keeping with what's already there. In fact, we think it's going to make it more consistent with what is already there in this area. And then a brief timeline. We submitted our application earlier this month. We have met with actually two different neighborhood associations. The first was with the president of the Southside Neighborhood Association, Mr. Anand Rao. We had a meeting with him in person a few weeks ago. We actually learned at the time that after we met with him, or just before we met with him, we realized that the map that the city has on its website listed two different associations for this property, not just one. So we actually then met virtually with Brenda Roberts and Colin Elgood, who are on the board of the Wilshire Area Neighborhood Association, which is the correct association that covers this property. As Ms. Karunarenthi just mentioned, the staff reports, the staff has reviewed our applications and has determined that the review criteria have been met and they recommend approval. And so with that, I'll respectfully request that our applications be recommended for approval, and I'd be happy to answer questions if anybody has.
Just before we move into questions, we have lost our quorum up here. We do have another member that's on their way to where we can place a vote. But so I'm going to open the floor for questions, but we're going to have to pause the meeting until that other member gets here.
Fine.
Karen, go ahead.
I have a question, possibly for staff. Will this go to the traffic folks at Savannah? I have some concerns about the configuration of the drive-in and the park, and it looks to me like we've got cars heading towards each other.
Yes, as I understand, this is just the concept plan. It hasn't gone through any of the engineering reviews yet.
But it will go through engineering.
Yes, it will.
Any other questions, Warden? Is there any public comment on this? So we will take a 15-minute break. We'll be back at 2:05. And again, just to the public, I apologize for this. We do our best to have quorums at these times of year. It tends to be the most challenging in Christmas time, but we should have somebody here within 15 minutes so we can resume. Folks, I've been informed that our member is just parking in the garage upstairs right now, so we should start as soon as he gets back. All right, folks, we have now reached our quorum again. Thank you for bearing with us, and thank you, Ms. Irvin, for being here with us. So we were at the point we didn't have any more public comment. We had asked the questions. So at this point, I'm calling for a vote or a motion.
Motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Jarrett, second.
All right. It has been properly moved and seconded. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
This is
the Red Roof Inn down on Abercorn, rezoning the front Mercy. Parcel.
Yeah.
Sorry, Flume Amendment. Yes. Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Matrika?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywinney?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. Motion passes. Thank you. Next up, we have map amendment rezone from OIE to BC to establish a restaurant at 11750 Abercorn Street. Or do we need to do these as separately? Okay. Can we go ahead and call for a motion on that? Okay, so we need a motion on item number 9, which is that same. It's the map amendment, yes.
Jeff Natriga, I vote that we go with staff opinion to approve this.
Steve, a second.
All right, Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Mr. Urban?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natriga?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens? Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. That motion also carries. We're moving on to item number 10, special use to establish a retail consumption dealer use in DR zoning district at 408 Bull Street, Unit A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services here at the MPC. This is a request, as you stated, at 408 Bull Street for a special use permit to allow accessory alcohol sales in the downtown residential zoning district. The petitioner, identified as Coastal Table and Tales, is a culinary bookstore and recreational cooking workshop. And so they are making this special use permit request today for the purpose of providing complimentary beer and wine to their customers as they participate in the preparation of their own individual meals. Again, as this is a recreational cooking workshop. This special use permit is going to require the approval of City Council, and it's worth mentioning that alcoholic beverage licensing is a separate and distinct process from the consideration of this special use permit. The particular type of license and the activities permitted under that will be considered by the ABC at the City of Savannah. To show you the future land use map, you can see the subject parcel is in the traditional neighborhood area here, and it is within the DR zoning district or downtown residential. And looking at Plan 2040, it describes this area as traditional neighborhood. These are areas that are residential in close proximity of downtown or outlying historically settled areas. And it includes non-residential uses that are compatible with the residential character of neighborhoods. This is an existing building, and the petitioner is going to occupy an area about 2,580 square feet that would consist of these two commercial suites that you see here on the inn adjoining East Jones Lane and Bull Street. This is a structure that was built in 1880. There are no modifications proposed in association with this use. Tax assessor describes the use of this structure as a retail store. And just to describe the downtown residential zoning district, it's established to accommodate residential and limited non-residential uses in a downtown setting. This is an urbanized environment in which residential and non-residential uses are expected to cohabitate peacefully. In looking at the review criteria for this particular request, staff found that subject property is located in a Flume character area and zoning district that do support limited non-residential uses that are compatible. And the proposed use advances the goal of creating economically vibrant, safe neighborhoods and commercial centers. Staff does recommend approval of the request with one condition, that the special use permit be non-transferable. It's my understanding the petitioner is joining us today virtually. I'm sure she's online to answer any questions you may have.
All right, thank you. If the petitioner is online, please state your name for the record, and you have 15 minutes.
Don Anderson.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Anderson, can you unmute yourself now?
Mr. Anderson, are you there?
Still self-muted.
You are self-muted right now. If you could unmute. Do we have a phone number for him that we could call him? Or her, sorry, Dawn. Ms. Anderson, are you there?
Oh, she has disconnected the audio, so I'm not sure.
How rude. All right, at this time, are there any questions for staff from members of the board?
I have a question.
Just from the board at this time, sir.
All right.
Oh, okay, then we will move into the public comment. Oh. Is she back online? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we're just going to see if we can get the petitioner online first to present, and then we'll move to the public.
Hi. Yes, ma'am. All right, Ms. Dawn, you're on speakerphone.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, commissioners, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today. As you are aware, my name is Dawn Anderson, owner of Coastal Table and Tales. located at 408 Bull Street. I need to make one modification. The presentation today noted that I occupy 2,500 square feet. In fact, I only occupy half of that space, approximately 1,300 square feet. There is another entrepreneur that occupies the remaining 1,200 square feet. So my space is half of the building. I want to begin by noting that I respect the neighborhood and the people who live there. While I'm a business owner, my husband and I are also looking to purchase a home nearby. We want to be part of the community, not just as shopkeepers, but as residents. As a result, I care deeply about preserving the character, safety, and quality of the historic district. Our business is intentionally small and focused. We are a culinary bookstore and recreational cooking workshop, not a restaurant and not a bar. Our classes are limited to 10 participants with seating for no more than 12 guests in total. Our plan is to hold 2 cooking workshops per week. There will be no food deliveries or service trucks. I personally will shop for ingredients at the Forsyth Farmers Market and local grocers. It's my intent to purchase locally and keep our operation small and intimate. Our organization, our bookstore is an intimate educational environment focused on food, culture, and community. Not food service, and most certainly not life. The special use permit simply allows us to offer a complimentary glass of wine or beer to guests after we prepare a shared meal together. This is about hospitality, sharing a meal and conversation, much like a gallery offering a glass of champagne during an art opening or a boutique serving wine at an evening event. There are no alcohol sales, no bar set up, and no intent to create a restaurant atmosphere. I hold a Georgia alcohol server's permit, and I will ensure that any future employee also holds one. Correction, a Savannah alcohol service permit. We will follow all applicable laws and fully comply with local and state regulations governing alcohol service. We take these responsibilities seriously and are committed to maintaining a safe, lawful, and respectful environment at all times. As I noted earlier, we will not create a restaurant-level environment, and we will not create restaurant-level waste. Our classes will produce minimal trash, and we've already arranged to secure a second city-issued trash can if necessary. There will be no dumpster, no overflow, and no reason for concern about pests or odors. We take pride in keeping our space clean, as well as our surroundings. And let me just be clear. We've made every effort to engage with our neighbors. Last week, I hand-delivered flyers introducing our shop and inviting everyone to our open house held this past Saturday. We had strong turnout, and an overwhelming majority of neighbors expressed enthusiasm and support for our business. Many said they're glad to see something creative, cultural, and community-centered opening on Bull Street. You have two letters from neighbors opposing our request. One neighbor raised a fair concern. What if future business owners aren't as careful as I know we are? I think that's a valid question. But as confirmed by staff, special use permits are not transferable. And in fact, we requested of staff. We support staff's recommendation. We believe each application must stand on its own merit, and this commission has full discretion to approve or deny future requests. I support the safeguard wholeheartedly. It protects the neighborhood and ensures accountability. In short, Coastal Table and Tales is a small, intentional, community-minded business that seeks to contribute to Savannah's cultural and culinary life while being a respectful, responsible neighbor. We thank you for your time and considerations, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Henderson. Any questions from the board? All right, Ms. Henderson, if you'll stay on the line as we go through public comment, you'll be given time to rebut after that. Thank you. All right, first on our speaker cards, I've got Aaron Scott. Aaron Scott here. Please state your name for the record and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Aaron Scott. Thank you for your time. I've owned property at 19 East Jones Lane, and I have been associated with Southern Food Alliance, and so I'm aware of cookways and how important they are to the community as well, all over Southern and all. So I know what she has wanted to do. But with that being said, they're a tour, and I've owned property since 2004. I'm aware that tourism is important to our community, and people around here say this block is the most famous in Savannah, especially Jones. Even though it's gratis, it could go to a Class C permit, and I'm curious about that and what it would do, especially with having two universities or colleges around here. As well, I'm curious about how late the events would take, hours. And also with cooking, like she said, possibly even there may be food waste, what it would do to possibly our homeless, which we have already a problem, and the safety of our neighborhood and community. Also, currently, there may be possibly, she said there couldn't be, but boxes and other things that would happen. Right now, there's parking, handicap parking up front. But yes, in the future, even with books and other things, would parking change? Would a loading zone happen or along the lane? Because I own only the carriage house, and being between Drayton and Bull, if the lane is blocked, I have problems with the lane and me getting out and being out and not being able to have, being able to go out where I need to get out and accessibility to get out of my house. I think that's about all I have to say. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Scott. Mr. Edward Hill.
Thank you. My name is Edward Hill. I live at 2 East Taylor Street. My house backs up, or the back of my house is on East Jones Lane as this building backs up to it. First thing I had was the 1,300 square feet. It's a little disconcerting because on all the applications, they indicate the 2,475.8 square feet is what this particular property is trying to get the beer and wine license for. But the fact is that it is only half of the building. It's half of a building. So the fronting on this thing is about 20, and it goes back 42 feet for the retail space of about 900 square feet. There is no fire exit. There's one entrance, there's one exit. There is a second story, sort of as a storage space, but it does not accommodate any way to get out, nor is there any vent for cooking food. I'm opposed to basically what this is a restaurant, and I'm think it would be a good idea some other place, but we're not interested in having as a neighbor a restaurant in this small 900 square foot selling space. No fire exit. Anyway, we're opposed. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. William B. Hale.
Thank you. My name, as you said, is Bill Hale. Appreciate the opportunity to make a comment today. I'm a retired banker, and I've lived within two blocks of this location for over 50 years. I've raised my family in this neighborhood. And while we're a combination to a certain degree of commercial and residential, we are primarily a residential neighborhood with families and small children. And one of the things we worked on very hard over the years in similar settings like this is to not have alcohol served in the neighborhood. And my concern is that this is going to change the personality of the neighborhood. And most importantly, it's going to set a dangerous precedent for the future. So my big concern is the serving of alcohol, and I don't think it should be allowed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Meredith Delaney.
Good afternoon. My name is Meredith Delaney. I live at 4 West Taylor Street, which is just across Bull Street from this location. I might be a little bit scattered for a moment. I have a statement I'll read at the end, but just to respond to some of what I've seen on your screen and then heard from the renter, Dawn, in her speech before we began. This is located at an area that is zoned, as you said, a traditional neighborhood hood zoning. Excuse me, Dawn's speaker here. I'm not sure if he's her lawyer.
Mr. Morrow is staff here.
At the staff. Thank you. I just was unclear as to who he was, but this gentleman did say we are a traditional neighborhood. We have limited non-residential uses in a downtown setting, and we welcome those. We embrace our commercial neighbors. But as Mr. Hale just said, we have worked hard to maintain an alcohol-free zone. We have young families. We have young children. We have a lot of foot traffic, and we just know that there are already areas in our downtown historic district where alcohol is allowed and could remain. We appreciate that this is non-transferable, but we do know that it would be an exception that could be considered again and again. To what Don said about seeing only two letters online, I haven't been able to look online today, but I know of at least four people who submitted them. So if you don't see more than two letters, I hope we can check that. And the letters that I know of were all in opposition to this request. Alcohol will be sold with the cost of this cooking class. So I appreciate that she's saying she's not in alcohol sales, but she does say she possesses a Savannah alcohol server's permit. And I don't know why we need someone that has an alcohol server's permit to operate something that is not a restaurant and not a bar.
It's required by the city.
Okay, well, thank you. But if this is not a restaurant and not a bar, I'm not certain why we have someone who serves alcohol with a permit. I appreciate her saying it's creative, cultural, and community-centered, and we welcome that sort of business without alcohol. We welcome shopkeepers, not alcohol servers. In my opinion, gallery openings and boutique offerings, champagne, are infrequent and not twice a week, which is regular. that could take place in the proper zone, which we already have in Savannah, Georgia. The city of Savannah has zoning for a reason. We have several commercial businesses in our neighborhood where the petitioner will rent, and the residents support these businesses. They have daytime commercial hours and do not provide alcohol. This renter at 408A Bull Street should have to follow the zoning rules already in place that every other commercial entity in this area follows. There should be no special exceptions for this business. Is that for me? Or
you can continue a little bit longer. Okay. I interrupted you, so go on.
Sorry. Thank you. In my opinion, exceptions lead to the loss of rules that were put in place to govern. And much time and work has gone into our MPC zoning plan. I know years ago on the DNA board, I was a part of many meetings to responsibly zone our city. We must respect the rules, and we will work together as residents and businesses in our beautiful city supporting each other. This is what makes the fabric of Savannah so special and draws thousands of visitors a year to witness it. Once that fabric is destroyed, there will be nothing historical or beautiful to see, only variances and exceptions. I ask that you deny this request for another exception in our historic district.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Caroline Hill.
My name is Caroline Hill. I live at 2 East Taylor Street. I will be very brief. We, the neighborhood, do not want any exceptions to our zoning as it stands now. This is a special permit that we feel will upset the balance that we've got in the neighborhood now, and it will open up the doors for many, many more. It just always does. We've lived here for 45 years, and we see it happening every day. And it wasn't stopped in the beginning, so it just rolls on and rolls on, and all of a sudden we've got a full-fledged restaurant and bar. We ask you to please not approve this permit. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Susan Atkinson.
Susan Atkinson, 301 East Charlton Street. I have not met the owner of the building, which I understand is a prominent restaurateur, but I have met the petitioner and the renter of the space, Dawn, who seems, as you could hear on the phone, very bright and business savvy. So it makes me wonder why a very savvy business owner would choose to rent a space in a non-alcohol neighborhood when she has the opportunity to have a business if she wants. If the priority is serving alcohol or to entice her clients in with by the serving of alcohol, that she would choose a location that clearly does not allow it. Retail is different than commercial. As you know, retail is 9 to 5 typically, quiet people perusing. I know Dawn mentions, and with good intention, there's 2 days a week and in quiet and all that, but plans change and things happen, and who, before you know it, it could be 7 days a week, it could be into nighttime, and it could transfer into something a little more disturbing. I wanted to echo too that in the intro where it says it was the area respects our neighbors as a neighborhood, and I'm sorry, I've lost my train of thought. Anyway. I just had one idea too. It's enticing clients in. There's nothing wrong with a very creative culinary group to create non-alcoholic drinks to accompany their meals when they serve them. I just really hope you'll see that this is inappropriate and that the applicant had every opportunity to choose a place that was zoned for alcohol, and she chose not to. And that to me seems suspicious in itself. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Atkinson. Mr. Parker.
Hi there. I'm Greg Parker, and I live at 10 East Taylor Street, and I own 12 East Taylor Street, and I'm back up to this building as well. Commissioners, thank you so much for allowing this public input to occur and to hear what it is that the neighborhood thinks. I think it's a little surprising that we heard from the petitioner that pretty much everybody that she knew of had been in favor of this, because so far what I'm hearing is that everybody that lives around here is opposed to it. So I'm in the retail business. I understand as well as anyone does when it's appropriate to do things in a certain area. And I've certainly been before planning commissions to say that I want to have a convenience store here, and people didn't think it was appropriate then. So I've been a part of this, and I've been on both sides of it. I'm a little perplexed why, and I feel like these other people that have presented have been a little more articulate than I am, but what Meredith said and what Bill said and what the Hills have said are all factual and true. It's perplexing to understand why you would come into an area like this and try to do it and then say, but we want to have alcohol. And I understand that this, if this is passed, it's not going to transfer to whoever else is going there, but I think it's setting a precedent. And that's my real concern. If we make a precedent, an exception for this petitioner, is then the person that owns the building or someone else is going to come in behind it and say, well, you gave permission to have it before, so perhaps maybe you will consider doing it again in the future. I think we've got to protect what we have. You know, our downtown community is very special. It's the centerville of everything that makes Savannah special. And I think we should guard this with every fiber of our beings. We don't want to be just a hospitality community. We don't want to be just a tourist community. And I was very impressed hearing the petitioner read her speech to us. And I think she's probably a very fine person that's got the greatest of intentions. But there are lots of opportunities for commercial spaces in Savannah where this wouldn't require an exception. And I hope that they're very successful in what they do and they find the right place. And I would welcome them, embrace them into our community. But like everyone else has said, I hope that this commission will decide to deny this request. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Louisa Morris.
Thank you for your time today. I'm Louisa Morris. I live at 22 East Jones Street. I've lived there about 2.5 years and grateful to live in this gorgeous downtown city. I would like to speak for most of my neighbors on Jones, and the consensus is we welcome a cookbook store to mirror what Mr. Parker and all of my other neighbors have said. She sounds like a wonderful woman with great intentions. We wish her all the best of luck. However, you know, there are other parts of downtown that she could have chosen if she wanted to serve alcohol. And we understand that this permit goes with her particular business. But as Mr. Parker just said, our street is worried about the precedents being set. And years down the road, if she's no longer there, the next person that comes in, well, what will happen then? Will it be, oh, well, they could sell alcohol, so we might as well grant these people the ability to sell alcohol. But maybe next time it's one step up. Maybe it's a boutique bar. Maybe it's a small restaurant cafe. So as far as all the neighbors are concerned, we thank you for listening to us, and we really hope you'll consider this for the neighborhood and keeping it quiet in our little zone. We have lots of restaurants all over downtown, which we all enjoy, but, you know, they're not steps from our doorstep. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Morris. Do we have anyone online?
No, sir.
All right, Ms. Henderson, you have the opportunity to rebut and respond to the public comment now. You there, Ms. Henderson?
I'm here.
You have the opportunity to reply to the public comment now.
Great. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Perfect. I thank my neighbors further comments. And I hear them. I'll have to agree that the neighborhood is a very special one. It's a beautiful, historic place, one that, as I mentioned earlier, I and my husband seek to not only do business there, but to live there. I would say to you that because we seek to serve a glass of wine with a meal that our guests will help prepare, doesn't make the area any less special. We, on the issue of looking to entice clients, we can't entice clients with a glass of wine or alcohol because we cannot advertise that we will provide it. There is no advertisement in our cooking class materials that wine or beer will be served with the meal at its conclusion. So, no, we cannot advertise or entice our potential clients with that. Regarding the server's permit, it's my understanding that it's a law that any distribution of alcohol requires distribution of it by a licensed server, one who goes through the city's process and then passes a test. We are not serving. I mean, I'm sorry, we're not selling. And we're prohibited from selling. But we're not, we have to follow the law regarding carding and assuring that whoever serves the wine is duly registered. With respect to precedent setting, I, again, have to defer to the MPC commissioners. I don't believe for a moment that the commissioners will look at future applicants and say, oh, because a permit was given to the former occupant of the space, ergo, we will give a permit to the new applicant. I have to have faith because I will live in the area. I have to have faith that the commissioners will review and evaluate any future petitioners based on the merit. Hence, I can't look at the precedent issue because I have to trust the commissioners. Regarding the residential ventilation hoods, the fire marshal has before her the ventilation hoods that I seek to purchase. It ultimately is in the purview of the fire chief to give thumbs up or thumbs down. So we will have ventilation hoods. There's no question about that. Regarding trash, I would just say we will not produce any more trash than a family will produce. Again, our table is small. In a week's time, that's 20 meals. And that's if we're at full capacity. In an average household of four people, four times seven is 28. That's 8 more people that produce trash. I can assure you that we will properly dispense of our trash. And as I mentioned during my presentation, if we need a second trash can, that's not an issue. I can't, you know, really speak to the small child issue that was raised, except to say 2 things. First, Savannah has an open carry law. As such, people walk around Savannah, including on Jones and Bull Street, drinking beer and wine and whatever they'd like to drink at all times of the day. My guests will not leave my area with an open container. My husband is an attorney. He is sitting for the Georgia bar, and we aren't looking to run afoul of any of the laws, but it's bigger than that. It's also ethics. And while other businesses may allow their alcohol to, you know, be carried, I believe the special use permit will only allow our guests to consume on the premises. In short, I hear what the neighbors say. I too will be a resident of the neighborhood. I care about what happens there, and our little culinary bookstore, which has no connection to the owner of the property other than I am a tenant. I have not met her. We're looking to be good neighbors and to provide an opportunity not just for tourists, but for my fellow neighbors to participate in interesting culinary and community-based experiences and to hear author talks and buy a cookbook or two. And to the commissioners, I hope that you approve my request, knowing that if we step out of line, our neighbors will watch us. It's clear that there is some opposition. We will do as we say, and we will follow the law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Henderson. Mr. Marr, will you just refresh our memories for what the petition is calling for and what the special use permit means?
Sure. If you don't mind, I'm actually going to go back to the staff report quickly because the criteria are there. So the ordinance offers some provisions regarding to uses that are potentially acceptable within a particular zoning district, but maybe they shouldn't necessarily be permitted by right. And so when someone is asking for a special use in a given zoning district, special uses don't generally appear across the ordinance as the same in every district. Special uses are those uses that, depending upon the zoning district that the activity would occur in, it may actually be a permitted use in a different district. So if you were in a BC district, this wouldn't be a special use. You wouldn't hear about it because it's allowed. This is a particular type of use that with guardrails and certain conditions that may be added through a zoning hearing of this nature, and of course, ultimately going on to city council, you may be able to condition a particular use to make it appropriate in the requested context. Some special uses actually also have use-related standards. You'll see later in this actual meeting where there's relief needed from a specific use standard. This isn't necessarily one that has one because, again, we're just talking about the appropriateness of alcohol within this context. But in some others, there may be specific distance requirements. Alcohol in particular has the benefit of going through alcohol license hearings. And so during that time, they will determine the appropriate distances from churches and schools and universities and things of that nature. And so there's an added sort of layer of protection with alcohol in particular. But again, with regard to special uses generally, these are uses that may be appropriate if they are conditioned and deemed appropriate by this board, with certain other stipulations that can be attached. This particular application is for ancillary alcohol sales that would be associated with a different principal use. I believe the zoning administrator has regarded this as an instructional studio in which cooking classes would take place. And so, again, the petitioner is not requesting to sell alcohol, so there's a little bit of a misfit between the particular request in the zoning ordinance. Nonetheless, the intent is that this board would deliberate over the appropriateness of alcohol being provided at a location within this particular zoning district.
Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Are there any questions from staff for the petitioner or from the board for the petitioner or staff? Ms. Jarrett?
So, it's a special use, but it is an allowed use in this area, in this zoning district with a permit, correct?
That is correct. It's designated with an S in the principal use table. That means it requires a special use permit. If this board deems that it meets all of the appropriate criteria, it can be permitted. So
okay.
It's just not permitted by right. It requires a little bit of additional permission.
Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Wilson.
I have a couple of questions. So the petitioner is already in that space and already doing the bookstore.
So these are separate processes. The alcohol licensing is one thing. The special use permit is another. The occupational tax certificate, all of those are separate processes. It's my understanding that she has not yet been established.
She has not yet been established in this space.
In this particular space.
In this particular space. And okay, what is the nearest location do we know of that serves beer and wine in that area?
That is a great question. I'm going to turn to my friend Google and just want to make sure we are at 408 Hill Street.
I think the closest place is on the corner of Liberty and
Publix. Park College Quarter or Publication Block. Liberty Street.
Major commercial areas.
Because right there across from One Fish, Two Fish, there's a
they requested an alcohol license and were denied for something special use, and they've been denied repeatedly. Asher and Rye has wanted a special use, and they've been denied.
We need order.
Folks, this is not public comment session right now, so please keep the comments from behind to a minimum.
Can I say something?
Not right now.
Ms. Henderson, the response is only if there's a question directly addressed to you.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Wilson, do you have any other questions?
Oh, yes. So, I'm sorry, what was, do we get, isn't there across from diagonal from One Fish, Two Fish, on Whitaker, yes, right. Yeah, go around the other way. the other and then right there across the street, keep on going down. Is that what, where that coffee shop is? And
yeah,
northeast. Yep, right there. Right there. Yep. What is that called? And do they serve beer and wine?
But I also suspect they have a different underlying zoning.
And do we know the cooking class hours?
Ms. Henderson, you can answer that question. That's directed to you.
Great. So the bookstore will open from 10 till 5:30 and will close until 6:15. And the cooking classes will occur from 6:15 to 8:15, no later than 8:30, at which time the bookstore will be closed, everything will be closed, and we will clean up and leave.
Ms. Wilson, do you have any other questions?
And one more. Okay. Do we have it? Do we know what was in that building before? What retail space was there before?
Was it an antique store?
Okay. Thank you. That's all.
Any other questions from the board? We can move into discussion then. I've got a few things. You know, this doesn't seem to be a big threat to me, to the neighborhood. You know, I feel like the amount of consumption on premises would be akin to probably a lot of the homeowners along that street. And I understand, you know, with culinary expertise, a lot of it has to do with pairing drinks with food. So I
hear you, but I gotta tell you, and I'm usually probably the most pro business support of everything. This one gives me great pause and I cannot support this. You know, and like, as Greg Parker very eloquently said, I'm also a lot of times on the other side of this equation asking for something. But the underlying zoning really gives me pause, and it already seems like she's pushing the boundaries mm-hmm. and having the cooking class. This just seems like way too much, taking the zoning one beyond what it was meant to accommodate.
I would have to agree. Even though it's an allowed use, I think that she could have found a lot of other locations that would allow the use without use permit.
I understand. I think that we got to be careful about not saying that it's not allowed here, because
Understood.
That's the purpose of the special use. And I think that, you know, she made her due diligence to see that it was allowed by special use, and that's why she's before us today. I think of all the salons and the galleries and all these other folks that have essentially the same rights. And a lot of these galleries are right in the middle of residential neighborhoods.
But I think the residences have rights too.
I agree. But, yeah, it's something to consider. And just, yeah, for clarity, anyone that serves alcohol within the city of Savannah is required to have a, server permit. Mr. Parker, I believe your employees also have to have a permit to be able to sell alcohol. I believe that's true for retail locations, just to clarify that. Any other discussion? Is there, Mr. Morrow, I wonder if there's any conditions that we could put on this that would make it more palatable to the neighbors as far as, you know, restricting operating hours or having it encoded in here that it could only be two nights a week? Or is there anything that we could add to this to make it more strict? I don't know that any of the neighbors would be okay with any alcohol, but is there anything that we could do as a board to make it more helpful for them?
Sure. In the past, we have seen restrictions on operating hours. In terms of enforcement, I think it would be difficult to say days of the week, and the applicant might want to take some time to consider, you know, whether or not this would still be a viable business if it were limited in that way. But for sure, we have seen operating hour restrictions and restrictions on beer and wine, as opposed to spirits, which are typically within the scope of these requests as well.
Yes, that's the other thing, is that this is just determining use as far as an actual liquor license category. That would be up to the city to approve.
That is correct.
Limitations on that.
However, this board may limit to beer and wine only, and if distilled spirits were desired at a later date, it would require coming back to this board for that particular question.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, if there's no further discussion, open the floor for a motion.
Move to deny staff recommendation.
Jeff Patrick, a second.
All right. Ms. Amick?
So I'm agreeing with that motion.
A yes would be in agreement to
then
that motion.
Then that's a yes.
All right. Mr. Urban?
No.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
I'm sorry, what's it?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Trinka?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
I think, and I just got to preface it because I really do straddle the fence on this one. I have to preface it, and I think it's primarily because of the base zoning was my biggest concern. I'll say yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I vote no. Yeses are 6 to no's 2. The motion to deny staff's recommendation carries.
Just so that you know, this will go to, I think, City Council.
Thank you very much.
Just so they know.
So that message, just to clarify again, that this recommendation goes to City Council.
Yeah, this is not a final decision, City Council. Got another meeting to go to.
And thank you. Thank you to the public for showing up and expressing your concerns. All right. Next we have, where are we? A variance to GDP 509 West 62nd Street.
Hey, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. This is Sadie Esch-Laurent with Development Services to talk about 509 West 62nd Street. So the petitioner is seeking MPC approval of two variances in association with a non-conforming minor subdivision in the RSF6 zoning district. The parcel is proposed to be subdivided into two new lots, as you can see on the screen here. There is an existing primary dwelling that will remain on the lot right here, and then a proposed primary dwelling will go on the other lot. So the following relief is requested. One, to reduce the minimum lot area required from 6,000 square feet to 4,252 square feet for two lots. And two, to reduce the minimum lot width required from 60 feet to 45 feet for two lots. The subject parcel is currently conforming in the RSF6 zoning district. It is just over 8,500 square feet in total, with 90 feet of width and 94.5 feet of depth. There is an easement on the rear of the property that is likely used for utilities, and it does not have lane access. Additionally, it has a future land use designation of residential and suburban single family. As mentioned, the parcel contains a primary dwelling that was built in or about 1927 and has a building footprint of just over 1,000 square feet. The petitioner is proposing to subdivide the parcel into two lots, and both parcels will have a lot width of 45 feet and a lot area of 4,252 square feet. And then here is a picture of the existing dwelling on the right and then the proposed vacant lot on the left. Here is a concept plan submitted by the petitioner showing the existing structure and the proposed structure, and it will meet all other development standards, including setbacks and off-street parking as seen on the concept plan. Additionally, here is a sketch shown by staff that shows the neighboring lots to the north, east, and south that have either the same or smaller lot width and lot area in comparison to the parcel. So looking at this development pattern in the neighborhood, it is irregular both in terms of lot area and lot width. And additionally, as mentioned, the proposal will meet other development standards. So with that in mind, as the proposed plan meets all our development standards and the neighborhood has an irregular development pattern, MPC staff recommends approval of the request. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Is the petitioner here?
Is it Scott Cook?
I'm sorry.
Yes, he's online.
What was your name, sorry?
Scott Cook.
Scott Cook, please state your name for the record, and you have 15 minutes.
Hi, my name is Scott Cook with Cook Architecture. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I'm representing the client, Mike Johnson. Thank you so much for the staff report and completely agree with the findings of staff, and I'm happy to answer any questions that the commission has.
Are there any questions for the staff or petitioner? Do we have any public comment on this?
No, no one online.
All right, I'll call for a motion.
Motion to approve staff's recommendation.
All right, it's been properly moved and seconded. Ms. Amick, how do you vote?
Yes.
All right, Mr. Urban?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. Motion carries. Thank you very much. All right, number 12, we have a text amendment for ADUs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board, Edward Morrow again. This is a request to amend the text of the zoning ordinance, particularly Article 8, Section 8.7, 8.7.3, related to accessory structures, and 8.7.4, related to accessory dwelling units. There are a series of sections that are impacted by the proposed text amendment, but this is essentially in an effort to bring some clarity and efficiency to our permitting of accessory dwelling units. The city and MPC have been engaged in discussions for some time now for targeted amendments to the zoning text in order to clarify some issues. And so these changes aim ultimately at supporting the creation of new housing supply through ADUs, which can offer increased housing variety, support aging in place, and provide existing residents with opportunities to generate additional income from their property. In 2019, when NUSA was adopted, ADUs required 200% of the lot area of the base zoning district in order to establish one. And that applied to all districts except for the TCs, TNs, D, and PD districts. There were some modifications that came in 2023 in order to reduce that 200% that was previously required to 125%. And it also approved the ability for property owners to secure variances in the event that their property did not reach that 125%. And so today is the day where this number is ultimately being proposed to be reduced to 100% of the minimum lot area required in a base zoning district to establish an ADU. And actually, that is probably one of the principal things that will come out of this. I took a moment to pull up the staff report because I felt it was significant to show you. As a result of this text amendment, as we look across our neighborhoods to show you the increase in conforming lots that would be brought within the scope of these provisions. In Hudson Hill, you would see the number of conforming lots at 125%, right, to establish an ADU go from 23% to 60%. That's a difference of 249 lots rather than the current 94. When we look at Midtown, you would see an increase of 57% to 76%. As we look across other districts, again, up to 84%, 85%, 90%, 100% within Windsor Forest. And so this will have significant impact on allowing more ADUs across our city as a result of these text amendments. There are a number of other benefits that will come through this. I will detail these very briefly just so everyone understands what is in kind of the process here. So there is added language to clarify which zoning districts and housing types allow ADUs. This was a point of, I won't say contention, but question as staff debated kind of which zoning districts should be permitted to have ADUs established. Also, the revisions allow for easier development of existing garages. There are a number of accessory structures that were built related to some of our dwellings in older neighborhoods. And so the conversion of those is a request that we see frequently. This text would allow folks to turn existing accessory structures into ADUs with much greater ease than they had experienced in the past. As I've just spoken about, the reduction from 125% to 100% for the lot area. It clarifies standards for multiple dwelling units on a single parcel and reflects the historic interpretation of the requirement. We would also see clarification in how it is that we get to the 40%. There were questions at one time about how it is that existing accessory structures and those proposed would be added up in aggregate to understand how much or how large an accessory dwelling unit could potentially be on a parcel. One of the more significant items, too, is that it removes the requirement that HPC provide a recommendation for ADU variances. This is going to significantly expedite the permitting and review process. This text amendment does advance some of the priorities expressed in our strategic planning documents, particularly GPS. This advances items in Goal 2. Related to the implementation of programs and partnering with organizations to build, retain, and improve affordable and workforce housing options, and also updating housing policies and ordinances to remove barriers. Also, the Housing Savannah Action Plan says that where possible, we should support appropriate zoning and development standards and licensing and similar ordinance amendments that promote housing affordability. And so this is moving in that direction. One thing that MPC staff did note in its review of this text amendment is that the text does not set a minimum floor area for ADUs. Previously, there was a 400 square foot minimum. This was removed in a 2023 amendment. And so right now our baseline standard is compliance with IRC and other applicable development codes. It is very much a safety-oriented approach rather than a livability. And so we thought it worthwhile to bring to your attention the idea that if ADUs are to be seen as long-term residents, that these are places that should be designed with respect for the needs of the occupants for functional space, storage, privacy, and accessibility. When we look at housing that's often developed around federal and state affordability standards, they tend to be larger than the IRC or the IBC would require, simply because these are dwellings where we intend for people to stay for a long period of time. They're not short range. They are definitely long-term residences. And so with that, that was the one item that staff wanted to bring to your attention. In addition, we'd like to recognize that one of the changes to the text would allow the variability of the number of bedrooms in an ADU. And so with this addition of bedrooms, you would get an added demand on all of our engineered systems that support our neighborhoods, streets, stormwater. And so MPC staff does encourage this board to consider dimensional minimums to ensure housing quality, consider criteria for appropriateness of allowing multiple bedrooms, and also for identification of priority growth areas and contextual guidelines. And you'll notice that last one is some language borrowed from the housing affordability text amendment that came through. There were some standards that we expected to come from the city with regard to identifying areas where additional growth might be necessary so that we wouldn't create situations where you've got substandard living conditions for people that already are there or for those who would be coming in. And so that's something that we would still like to keep in mind as we talk about additional growth and density in some of our interior neighborhoods. With that, MPC staff does recommend approval of these proposed text amendments with one condition, and that is the establishment of variance criteria for Section 8.7.4D3, permitting ADUs to contain multiple bedrooms within 90 days of council's adoption of the proposed text amendments. Again, this is in the interest of ensuring that the Zoning Board of Appeals has adequate instruction as to what factors they should be considering before someone is allowed to establish multiple bedrooms in an accessory dwelling unit. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right, thank you. Do we have anyone from the city to speak on this?
I believe Ms. Liddy was tied up with Civic Center engagement activities, but she did correspond.
Okay.
See her online. She was not here before, but now she is.
Oh, excellent.
Are you there?
She is willing to speak.
Ms. Liddy?
That's muted.
Are there any questions from the board for staff? Anybody? Bueller? No.
I guess I just want to confirm that what you're encouraging with the added bedroom equates to added demand or engineered system, that is a component of this recommendation correct. Just want to make sure that it's inclusive.
Yes.
Because I do agree with that concept. So.
Yeah, we, I think we all recognize the urgency of needing additional housing units. And so the idea here is that we would just have some baseline and some guidance, for not necessarily giving just zoning approval, but also thought to systemic, investment and improvement of all of our engineered systems. Again, some of our systems, do have areas where they are underutilized, where there is excess water capacity, where there is, you know, adequate stormwater facilities. But some of these other areas, you know, they are, at their capacity or over their capacity. And so just giving a little bit more framework to understanding where it is that we need to make investments to support, these additional zoning allowances that would come through.
Thank you. All right, I've got one speaker card. If Ms. Liddy comes online, though, please let me know. Lorelei and McKinnon. Sure.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Lorelei McKinnon, and I'm a resident of Greater Ardsley Park. I want to express my strong support for this amendment. Expanding flexibility for accessory dwelling units is a meaningful and practical step towards addressing Savannah's housing shortage and towards restoring more missing middle options in our neighborhoods. For decades, we've steadily eliminated smaller, more attainable housing types from our zoning code, leaving few choices between a large single-family home and a large apartment complex. So ADUs will help to fill that gap and will allow homeowners to create modest, well-designed homes for aging parents, adult children, local workers, adding gentle density without disrupting neighborhood character. This change also reduces unnecessary red tape and makes it possible for more residents to be part of the housing solution, so not just developers, big D developers. It's a forward-thinking reform that supports affordability, flexibility, and the long-term health of our community. So I thank you for your leadership in advancing this important step.
Thank you, Ms. McKinnon. Yeah, get her back.
I got a text message saying I'm not able to figure it out how to unmute herself.
I'm sorry?
She is here. Okay.
She's here? Oh. Can we call and put her speaker up to the microphone?
I'm happy. Bridget incoming.
Let her know she's on the microphone first, please.
No warnings, no warnings. She doesn't want to text us.
She's
okay.
New phone, who dis?
Well, at least while we're waiting, and even if she doesn't have the opportunity to come back on, I will say that we've discussed this previously at length regarding just ADUs when it initially came out. We had some changes, and they made some adjustments, and we said that we would come back and look at it within, I think, 16 to 18 months, and that's what's being done. I will just reiterate, it's really important to have criteria for variance standards. You just don't say you're going to have variance without having that criteria in place. It protects the people who've already made investments in their neighborhoods to ensure that they're not dealing with something that could be pretty overwhelming. However, we do appreciate and understand the need for giving people the opportunity for affordable I don't want to say affordable housing, but providing housing for a variety of folks and also being able to generate additional income to help cover some of their expenses. So I know Ms. Liddy's not here, and I don't know if she's able to get back on the phone, but do you have her on the phone?
I'm Mike.
Okay, good. Hi, Bridget.
Hi. Ms. Liddy, go ahead if you want to contribute to the presentation there.
So can you hear me?
Yes.
Awesome. This is Bridget Liddy from the city, and we're very excited about this amendment. We've been working on it closely with MPC staff to ensure that we have addressed a lot of hiccups from the previous amendment and then also opening it up for greater flexibility, similar to what Lorelei McKinnon was talking about and what Edward had presented in his presentation. So we are super excited and happy. If you have any questions, I'll be more than willing to answer them for you.
Any questions for Ms. Liddy? All right. Can we just switch to the phone with the mic? I can hear them so much better this way than when they come through the system.
That is the truth.
Or maybe get some speakers over here. All right. If there's no other questions, open the floor for a motion.
Stevens, motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Jeff Nedrica, second.
All right. It's been properly moved and seconded. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nutrika?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywinnie?
Yes.
I too vote yes. The motion carries. Thank you. All right. Next we have variances to GDP 1206 East 68th Street, 5302 Sanders, and 1202 East 69th Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our very last item of the day. This is a petition that in other forms has been before this board in the past. It is associated with Community Bible Church, which is off of Waters Avenue. You can see the subject parcels in this request outlined in yellow on your screen. And so just to offer you a little bit of zoning history here, the petitioner is requesting MPC approval of a series of variances that are associated with its GDP for expansion of a place of worship that's located in the RSF6 zoning district, which is a single family zoning district. CBC received its special use permit to expand its campus through recommendation of approval from this board and a grant of that special use permit on February 8th, 2024 from City Council. There were two conditions that were associated with that. The first was submission of a general development plan that identified all the variances that it would require. And the second was that the petitioner submit a campus master plan that was reflective of a parking agreement that Attorney Harold Yellen provided to usher that petition through. And so this is in fulfillment of those conditions. There are eight variances that are requested. The first, 1206 East 68th and 5302 Sanders, associated with what is referred to as the Gardens Building. The first variance requested is relief from the civic use standards requiring a 50-foot separation between a place of worship and a residential property. And the others are related to the front and side setbacks for the proposed structure and also some buffer relief. The new structure is situated about 5 feet from the property line, and so there is a request for a 15-foot reduction in the 20-foot option of the Type B buffer. Related to the Welcome Center building at 1202 East 69th Street, also four variances, the first being relief from the civic use standards requiring a 50-foot separation for a place of worship from a residential property, and also some front side and rear setbacks. So just to offer you a view of the ordinance and policy documents here, the zoning for the area, again, the subject properties hatched here. You can see they're surrounded by RSF6 zoning. And then looking at the future land use map, this is a relatively low density single family suburban future land use designation. So the subject properties identified as the CBC campus are outlined here in color by this dashed line, and the newly proposed structures that are requesting variance relief are colored in yellow here, or this golden color. You can see the one that is down here off of East 69th Street is the Welcome Center that is right here. That's what I'm circling with my cursor. You can see in this old street view image, a single family residence that used to be located there. It is now vacant, and this property is being used for off-street parking in association with the existing church. And the addition to the Gardens Building is up here. That is what this proposed addition would look like. And right now you can see the church that was acquired by CBC. There are facilities that are proposed to be expanded in association with this request. So rendering. There are several standards at issue here. First, those related to 5.7.6 of the zoning ordinance, which details all of our setbacks for permitted non-residential uses within the RSF6 district. Front and rear setbacks are required to be 30 feet. Side setbacks are required to be 20. Section 8.3.15 details the civic use standards, and so that's the one that states that a place of worship has to be 50 feet from any residential property. And third, section 9.5.4 is related to our general site standards, and this is where the type B buffer comes in. You can see the new building would sit just about 5 feet from this property line. The variant of this buffer that the petitioner has chosen is 20 feet wide, and so they require 15 feet of relief. And so this visual here, I've chosen the landscape plan to show you not just the line work, but also to show you how the petitioner plans to buffer these structures from the adjoining residences. So you can see the welcome building that is here would have a nice buffer, but it does require some front, side, and rear setback relief. Everything outside in red, outlined in red, is encroaching into a setback, and that is the variance relief requested. This is the body of an existing building. You can see here it is situated about 5 feet from this property line. And I would say this is 1980s construction, more or less. And so this is a building that was not built by this current congregation, but that was acquired subsequently. And so this is an expansion of that building that the current petitioner is proposing to place here. And so that setback is consistent with the existing structure. Again, everything outlined in red, requiring variance relief here on the front, the side. And you can see the landscaping that will be right here. And so with that, MPC staff does recommend approval of these requested variances, and that does require that these parcels be recombined, those identified as 1202 East 68th and 5202 Sanders Street. Otherwise, we would have some issues in applying these setbacks. They are currently subdivided for single-family residences, and so that recombination is going to be necessary. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here to present?
Yes.
All right. Don't be shy.
Hey, two for one.
Yeah. Just state your name for the record, please, before you start.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Tom Havens. I'm the project engineer on the project.
I'm Mark Pickering. I'm from Community Bible Church. I'm one of the elders. I'm also the construction project manager on staff part-time as a retired civil engineer.
And so, basically, is there any way we could go backwards here, Edward, and put your – yeah, here we are. So, in a nutshell, what we'd like to do is we'd like to what's important about these drawings is that we meet the lot coverage requirements on this. It looks like the buildings are big just because the setbacks are so weird, oddly shaped. It's like on the building on 67th and Sanders, you wouldn't be able to fit a mobile home in the area that's left after setbacks are taken. So it makes it look like the buildings are large when in fact they meet the building coverage requirements on each of the lots. So I wanted to point that out. Also on the Garden Center addition on 67th Street, there's a 15-foot easement on the other side of the fence that actually provides a lot of buffer area between that and the next residence to the east. So, Mark, if you'd like to add anything.
East is plan north.
Plan north on this, right.
But that's east. Okay.
Yeah, right.
I don't have a lot to add. We've been efforting on this, as you can see, from early 2024, and put a lot of effort into a parking plan and a traffic management plan with our congregation and with the neighbors in the neighborhood. I think we've done a good job. I think we've satisfied the few outliers that we had with city staff, and we're excited to try to move forward. This will be a great addition to our Sunday worship event.
Any questions from the board for petitioner or staff? Ms. Wilson,
are you telling me there's not one single person opposing this?
No. Does any neighborhood have that, ma'am? Okay. We just saw that, didn't we?
Ms. Wilson, did you have a question? Okay. All right, discussion. The only thing I want to say is I've heard from some folks in the neighborhood that have said that the parking situation has gotten better. I do have apprehensions about kind of institutions like this absorbing more and more of an existing neighborhood and kind of changing the pattern of the neighborhood. But that's not really necessarily what we're hearing today. I just wanted to throw that out there, that I hope at some point you guys have an end game as far as your growth, and that we don't just continue to see house after house get absorbed into this. Did anybody else have anything else to say?
Just so for the record, I was just stating that I agree with Mr. Cole's sentiments.
All right, I'll open the floor for a motion.
I'm going to make a motion to support staff's recommendation for approval.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a properly moved and seconded motion. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Mr. Urban?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. The motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So there are no presentations. Other business, we have resolution to amend FSA plan dependent care. Do we need any presentation on that? No? Okay. All right. Do we need a motion on that?
Yes.
Okay. Open the floor for a motion.
Move to approve.
Jeff Notrika, second.
All right. We'll do a voice vote on this. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion carries. Now a motion for adjournment.
So move.
All right.